Understand by Ted Chiang. Part 2. The visiting doctor's name is Clausen, and he doesn't behave like the other doctors. Judging by his manner, he's accustomed to wearing a mask of blandness with his patients, but he's a bit uncomfortable today. He affects an air of friendliness, but it isn't as fluent as the perfunctory noise that the other doctors make.
The test works this way, Leon. You'll read some descriptions of various situations, each presenting a problem. After each one, I want you to tell me what you'd do to solve that problem.
I nod. I've had this kind of test before. Fine, fine. He types a command, and the screen in front of me fills with text. I read the scenario. It's a problem in scheduling and prioritizing. It's realistic, which is unusual. Scoring such a test is too arbitrary for most researchers' tastes. I wait before giving my answer, though Clausen is still surprised at my speed. That's very good, Leon. He hits a key on his computer. Try this one. We continue with more scenarios. As I'm reading the fourth one, Clausen is careful to display only professional detachment. My response to this problem is of special interest to him, but he doesn't want me to know. The scenario involves office politics and fierce competition for a promotion. I realize who Clausen is. He's a government psychologist, perhaps military, probably part of the CIA's Office of Research and Development. This test is meant to gauge Hormone K's potential for producing strategists. That's why he's uncomfortable with me. He's used to dealing with soldiers and government employees, subjects whose job is to follow orders. It's likely that the CIA will wish to retain me as a subject for more tests. They may do the same with other patients, depending on their performance. After that, they'll get some volunteers from their ranks, starve their brains of oxygen, and treat them with Hormone K. I certainly don't wish to become a CIA resource, but I've already demonstrated enough ability to arouse their interest. The best I can do is to downplay my skills and get this question wrong. I offer a poor course of action as my answer, and Clausen is disappointed. Nonetheless, we press on. I take longer on the scenarios now and give weaker responses. Sprinkled among the harmless questions are the critical ones, one about avoiding a hostile corporate takeover, another about mobilizing people to prevent the construction of a coal-burning plant. I miss each of these questions. Clausen dismisses me when the test ends. He's already trying to formulate his recommendations. If I'd shown my true abilities, the CIA would recruit me immediately. My uneven performance will reduce their eagerness, but it won't change their minds. The potential returns are too great for them to ignore Hormone K. My situation has changed profoundly. When the CIA decides to retain me as a test subject, my consent will be purely optional. I must make plans. It's 4 days later, and Shay is surprised.
You want to withdraw from the study?
Yes, effective immediately. I'm returning to work.
If it's a matter of compensation, I'm sure we...
No, money's not the problem. I've simply had enough of these tests.
I know the tests become tiring after a while, but we're learning a great deal, and we appreciate your participation, Leon. It's not merely...
I know how much you're learning from these tests. It doesn't change my decision. I don't wish to continue. Shay starts to speak again, but I cut him off. I know that I'm still bound by the confidentiality agreement. If you'd like me to sign something confirming that,
Send it to me. I get up and head for the door. Goodbye, Dr. Shea. It's 2 days later when Shea calls.
Leon, you have to come in for an examination. I've just been informed adverse side effects have been found in patients treated with hormone K at another hospital.
He's lying. He'd never tell me that over the phone.
What sort of side effects?
Loss of vision. There's excessive growth of the optic nerve, followed by deterioration. The CIA must have ordered this when they heard that I'd withdrawn from the study. Once I'm back in the hospital, Shea will declare me mentally incompetent and confine me to their care. Then I'll be transferred to a government research institution. I assume an expression of alarm.
I'll come down right away.
Good. Shea is relieved that his delivery was convincing.
We can examine you as soon as you arrive.
I hang up and turn on my terminal to check the latest information in the FDA database. There's no mention of any adverse effects on the optic nerve or anywhere else. I don't discount the possibility that such effects might arise in the future, but I'll discover them by myself. It's time to leave Boston. I begin packing. I'll empty my bank accounts when I go. Selling the equipment in my studio would generate more cash, but most of it is too large to transport. I take only a few of the smallest pieces. After I've been working a couple of hours, the phone rings again. Shea, wondering where I am. This time I let the machine pick it up.
Leon, are you there? This is Dr. Shea. We've been expecting you for quite some time.
He'll try calling one more time, and then he'll send the orderlies in white suits, or perhaps the actual police, to pick me up. 7:30 p.m. Shea is still in the hospital waiting for news about me. I turn the ignition key and pull out of my parking spot across the street from the hospital. Any moment now, he'll notice the envelope I slipped under the door to his office. As soon as he opens it, he'll realize that it's from me.
Greetings, Dr. Shea. I imagine you're looking for me.
A moment of surprise, but no more than a moment. Then he'll regain his composure and alert security to search the building for me and check all departing vehicles. Then he'll continue reading.
You can call off those burly orderlies who are waiting at my apartment. I don't want to waste their valuable time. You're probably determined to have the police issue an APB on me, though. Therefore, I've taken the liberty of inserting a virus in the DMV computer that will substitute information whenever my license plate number is requested. Of course, you could give a description of my car, but you don't even know what it looks like, do you?
Leon. He'll call the police to have their programmers work on that virus.
He'll conclude that I have a superiority complex, based on the arrogant tone of the note, the unnecessary risk taken in returning to the hospital to deliver it, and the pointless revelation of a virus which might otherwise have gone undetected.
Shea will be mistaken, though. Those actions are designed to make the police and CIA underestimate me, so I can rely on their not taking adequate precautions. After cleaning my virus from the DMV computer, the police programmers will assess my programming skills as good, but not great, and then load the backups to retrieve my actual license number. This will activate a second virus, a far more sophisticated one. This will modify both the backups and the active database. The police will be satisfied that they've got the correct license number and spend their time chasing that wild goose. My next goal is to get another ampule of hormone K. Doing so, unfortunately, will give the CIA an accurate idea of how capable I really am. If I hadn't sent that note, the police would discover my virus later, at a time when they'd know to take super stringent precautions when eradicating it. In that case, I might never be able to remove my license number from their files. Meanwhile, I've checked into a hotel, and I'm working out of the room's data net terminal.
I've broken into the private database of the FDA. I've seen the addresses of the Hormone K subjects and the internal communications of the FDA. A clinical hold was instituted for Hormone K. No further testing permitted until the hold is lifted. The CIA has insisted on capturing me and assessing my threat potential before the FDA goes any further. The FDA has asked all the hospitals to return the remaining ampules by courier. I must get an ampule before this happens. The nearest patient is in Pittsburgh. I reserve a seat on a flight leaving early tomorrow morning. Then I check a map of Pittsburgh and make a request to the Pennsylvania Courier Company for a pickup at an investment firm in the downtown area. Finally, I sign up for several hours of CPU time on a supercomputer. I'm parked in a rental car around the corner from a skyscraper in Pittsburgh. In my jacket pocket is a small circuit board with a keypad. I'm looking down the street in the direction the courier will arrive from. Half the pedestrians wear white air filter masks, but visibility is good. I see it two intersections away. It's a late model domestic van, Pennsylvania Courier painted on the side. It's not a high-security courier. The FDA isn't that worried about me. I get out of my car and begin walking toward the skyscraper. The van arrives shortly, parks, and the driver gets out. As soon as he's inside, I enter the vehicle. It's just come from the hospital. The driver is on his way to the 40th floor, expecting to pick up a package from an investment firm there. He won't be back for at least 4 minutes. Welded to the floor of the van is a large locker with double-layered steel walls and door. There's a polished plate on the door. The locker opens when the driver lays his palm against its surface. The plate also has a data port in its side, used for programming it. Last night, I penetrated the service database for Lucas Security Systems, the company that sells handprint locks to Pennsylvania Courier. There I found an encrypted file containing the codes to override their locks. I must admit that while penetrating computer security remains generally anesthetic, certain aspects of it are indirectly related to very interesting problems in mathematics. For example, a commonly used method of encryption normally requires years of supercomputer time to break. However, during one of my forays into number theory, I found a lovely technique for factoring extremely large numbers. With this technique, a supercomputer could break this encryption scheme in a matter of hours. I pull the circuit board from my pocket and connect it to the data port with a cable. I tap in a 12-digit number, and the locker door swings open. By the time I'm back in Boston with the ampule, the FDA has responded to the theft by removing all pertinent files from any computer accessible through the data net, as expected. With the ampule and my belongings, I drive to New York City. The fastest way for me to make money is, oddly enough, gambling. Handicapping horse races is simple enough. Without attracting undue attention, I can accumulate a moderate sum and then sustain myself with investments in the stock market. I'm staying in a room in the cheapest apartment I could find near New York that has data net outlets. I've arranged several false names under which to make my investments and will change them regularly. I shall spend some time on Wall Street so that I can identify high-yield, short-term opportunities from the body language of brokers. I won't go more than once a week. There are more significant matters to attend to. Gestalts beckoning my attention. As my mind develops, so does my control over my body. It is a misconception to think that during evolution, humans sacrificed physical skill in exchange for intelligence. Wielding one's body is a mental activity. While my strength hasn't increased, my coordination is now well above average. I'm even becoming ambidextrous. Moreover, my powers of concentration make biofeedback techniques very effective. After comparatively little practice, I am able to raise or lower my heart rate and blood pressure. I write a program to perform a pattern match for photos of my face and search for occurrences of my name. I then incorporate it into a virus for scanning all public display files on the datanet. The CIA will have the National DataNet news briefs display my picture and identify me as a dangerously insane escaped patient, perhaps a murderer. The virus will replace my photo with video static. I plant a similar virus in the FDA and CIA computers to search for copies of my picture in any downloads to regional police. These viruses should be immune to anything that their programmers can come up with. Undoubtedly, Shea and the other doctors are in consultation with a psychologist of the CIA, guessing where I might have gone. My parents are dead, so the CIA is turning its attention to my friends, asking whether I've contacted them. They'll maintain surveillance on them in the event I do. A regrettable invasion of their privacy, but it isn't a pressing matter. It's unlikely that the CIA will treat any of their agents with hormone K to locate me. As I myself demonstrate, a super-intelligent person is too difficult to control. However, I'll keep track of the other patients, in case the government decides to recruit them. The quotidian patterns of society are revealed without my making an effort. I walk down the street, watching people go about their business, and though not a word is spoken, the subtext is conspicuous. A young couple strolls by, the adoration of one bouncing off the tolerance of the other. Apprehension flickers and becomes steady as a businessman, fearful of his supervisor, begins to doubt a decision he made earlier today. A woman wears a mantle of simulated sophistication, but it slips when it brushes past the genuine article. As always, the roles one plays become recognizable only with greater maturity. To me, these people seem like children on a playground. I'm amused by their earnestness and embarrassed to remember myself doing those same things. Their activities are appropriate for them, but I couldn't bear to participate now. When I became a man, I put away childish things. I will deal with the world of normal humans only as needed to support myself. I acquire years of education each week, assembling ever larger patterns. I view the tapestry of human knowledge from a broader perspective than anyone ever has before. I can fill gaps in the design where scholars never even notice a lack, and enrich the texture in places that they felt were complete. The natural sciences have the clearest patterns. Physics admits of a lovely unification, not just at the level of fundamental forces, but when considering its extent and implications. Classifications like optics or thermodynamics are just straitjackets, preventing physicists from seeing countless intersections. Even putting aside aesthetics, the practical applications that have been overlooked are legion. Years ago, engineers could have been artificially generating spherically symmetric gravity fields. Having realized this, however, I won't build such a device or any other. It would require many custom-built components, all difficult and time-consuming to procure. Furthermore, actually constructing the device wouldn't give me any particular satisfaction, since I already know it would work, and it wouldn't illuminate any new gestalts. I'm writing part of an extended poem as an experiment. After I've finished one canto, I'll be able to choose an approach for integrating the patterns within all the arts. I'm employing 6 modern and 4 ancient languages. They include most of the significant worldviews of human civilization. Each one provides different shades of meaning and poetic effects. Some of the juxtapositions are delightful. Each line of the poem contains neologisms born by extruding words through the declensions of another language. If I were to complete the entire piece, it could be thought of as Finnegan's Wake,
multiplied by pounds, cantos. The CIA interrupts my work. They're baiting a trap for me. After 2 months of trying, they've accepted that they can't locate me by conventional methods, so they've turned to more drastic measures. The news services report that the girlfriend of a deranged murderer has been charged with aiding and abetting his escape. The name given is Connie Parrott, someone I was seeing last year. If it goes to trial, it's a foregone conclusion that she'll be sentenced to a lengthy prison term. The CIA is hoping that I won't allow that. They expect me to attempt a maneuver that will expose me to capture. Connie's preliminary hearing is tomorrow. They'll ensure that she's released on bail, through a bondsman if necessary, to give me an opportunity to contact her. Then they'll saturate the area around her apartment with undercover agents to wait for me. I begin editing the first image on screen. These digital photos are so minimal compared to Hollow's, but they serve the purpose. The photos, taken yesterday, show the exterior of Connie's apartment building, the street out front, and nearby intersections. I move the cursor across the screen, drawing small crosshairs in certain locations on the images. A window, with lights out but curtains open, in the building diagonally opposite. A street vendor, 2 blocks from the rear of the building. I mark 6 locations altogether. They indicate where CIA agents were waiting last night when Connie went back to her apartment. Having been cued by the videotapes of me in the hospital, they knew what to look for in all male or ambiguous passerbys. The confident, level gait. Their expectations worked against them. I simply lengthened my stride, bobbed my head up and down a bit, reduced my arm motion. That, and some atypical clothes, were sufficient for them to ignore me as I walked through the area. At the bottom of one photo, I type the radio frequency used by the agents for communication, and an equation describing the scrambling algorithm employed. Once I've finished, I transmit the images to the director of the CIA. The implication is clear. I could kill his undercover agents at any time, unless they withdraw. To have them drop charges against Connie, and for a more permanent deterrent against the CIA's distractions, I shall have to do some more work. Pattern recognition again, but this time it's of a mundane variety. Thousands of pages of reports, memos, correspondence, each one is a dot of color in the pointillist painting. I step back from this panorama, watching for lines and edges to emerge and create a pattern. The megabytes that I scanned constituted only a fraction of the complete records for the period I investigated, but they were enough. What I found is rather ordinary, far simpler than the plot of a spy novel. The director of the CIA was aware of a terrorist group's plan to bomb the Washington, D.C. metro system. He let the bombing occur in order to gain congressional approval for the use of extreme measures against that group. A congressman's son was among the casualties, and the CIA director was given a free hand in handling the terrorists. While his plans aren't actually stated in CIA records, they're implied quite clearly. The relevant memos make only oblique references, and they float in a sea of innocuous documents. If an investigating committee were to read all of the records, the evidence would be drowned out by the noise. However, a distillation of the incriminating memos would certainly convince the press. I send the list of memos to the director of the CIA with a note, "Don't bother me, and I won't bother you." He'll realize that he has no alternative. This little episode has reinforced my opinion of the affairs of the world. I could detect clandestine ploys everywhere if I kept informed about current events, but none of them would be interesting. I shall resume my studies. Control over my body continues to grow.
By now I could walk on hot coals or stick needles in my arm if I were so inclined. However, my interest in Eastern meditation is limited to its application to physical control. No meditative trance I can attain is nearly as desirable to me as my mental state when I assemble gestalts out of elemental data.
I'm designing a new language. I've reached the limits of conventional languages, and now they frustrate my attempts to progress further.
They lack the power to express concepts that I need, and even in their own domain, they're imprecise and unwieldy.
They're hardly fit for speech, let alone thought.
Existing linguistic theory is useless. I'll reevaluate basic logic to determine the suitable atomic components for my language. This language will support a dialect co-expressive with all of mathematics, so that any equation I write will have a linguistic equivalent. However, mathematics will be only a small part of the language, not the whole. Unlike Leibniz, I recognize symbolic logic's limits. Other dialects I have planned will be co-expressive with my notations for aesthetics and cognition. This will be a time-consuming project, but the end result will clarify my thoughts enormously. After I've translated all that I know into this language, the patterns I seek should become evident.